My friends at MyPillow, my buddy Mike Lindell, told me he was coming out with a brand new product. It's called the new mattress topper. So I got the new mattress topper immediately, and I've been sleeping on it now for a couple of months. It's the best thing you've ever felt in your life. Now, you literally have MyPillow foam for support. It's a transitional foam that helps relieve pressure points, and it's ultra-soft, patented temperature-regulating cover. And I got to tell you, it has a 10-year warranty, a cover that's washable and dryable. It's made in the USA, backed by their 60-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Once you try this new mattress topper, you put it right over your mattress, you will never sleep better. And right now, you, my radio listeners, you're going to save 30% off when you go to MyPillow.com and use the promo code TOPPER. And by the way, Mike will also give you two standard MyPillows absolutely free. All right, so try MyPillow.com, promo code TOPPER, promo code TOPPER for this great deal and the best night's sleep you ever had. Hey, it's that time of year for those of you, God forbid, you got to keep your New Year's resolution. What if you're a timeshare owner and you want to get out of your timeshare? Maybe that's at the top of your list, or maybe you made a bad investment over the years. It doesn't matter. Let not your heart be troubled, because the new year is also a reminder that you can get serious about getting rid of this timeshare and doing it right and doing it legally. And Lone Star Transfer is absolutely an amazing group of people. From beginning to end, I highly recommend, if you have any type of timeshare, I want you to contact Lone Star and tell them I told you to call. They'll give you a free, no obligation consultation, and they'll help get you out of your timeshare. They'll do it the right way, the legal way, and it will take very little effort on your part, just by calling pound 250 on your mobile phone and saying the keyword timeshare. That's pound 250 on your cell phone, keyword timeshare. You can check them out online at lonestartransfer.com.
You have the option to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message from iHeart Media.
All right, glad you're with us. All right, so I'm getting news that it should be breaking tonight at 9 on Hannity that I can't tell you about yet, but it is going to put a lot of clarification on the FISA warrants and the applications. That's all I can tell you right now. I'm not trying to tease you. I'm just telling you this is going to blow FISA wide open tonight. And that's great news. And we'll be breaking it on Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News channel. And what did they know? When did they know it? Those are going to be very interesting questions. And did they lie about it? And is there evidence of it? I mean, look, you have an FBI that, again, leadership in the FBI. Look at James Comey's FBI right now. Under James Comey, all these people are gone, fired, resigned, demoted. You know, now we have the general counsel of the FBI under James Comey. He's now under a criminal investigation. The deputy FBI director under James Comey, he's under a criminal investigation. You know, at the end of this, and I think by tonight, when we break this new news, James Comey is going to be right in the middle of this. And James Comey, I warned you a long time ago, because he acts so arrogant and he acts like he's holier than thou and so sanctimonious. And he's the only one that has the real truth out there. And but it's under his watch where all this abuse of power took place. Remember, he signs a FISA warrant, the first one, in October of 2016. And we now know that the bulk of that information was never verified or corroborated. That in and of itself is committing fraud on the court, because that's the FBI's job. We even have Rod Rosenstein, who signed the fourth warrant, the third renewal warrant, you know, admitting that if you sign on to your career official signing on to a FISA warrant to spy on an American, in this case, an American associated with a presidential campaign, you've got big trouble.
The way we operate in the Department of Justice, if we're going to accuse somebody of wrongdoing, We have to have admissible evidence and credible witnesses. We need to prepare to prove our case in court. And we have to affix our signature to the charging document. That's something that not everybody appreciates. There's a lot of talk about FISA applications. And many people that I see talking about it seem not to recognize what a FISA application. A FISA application is actually a warrant, just like a search warrant. In order to get a FISA search warrant, you need an affidavit signed by a career federal law enforcement officer who swears that the information in the affidavit is true and correct to the best of his knowledge and belief. And that's the way we operate. And if it's wrong, sometimes it is, if you find out there's anything incorrect in there, that person is going to face consequences.
Oh, that person is going to face consequences. Well, now we're getting to the bottom of it, and this is going to be probably the biggest breakthrough tonight that we've had in at least 6 months regarding this, and it's going to impact a lot of people. And it's interesting because with the hearings of William Barr yesterday, and can I calm some of you down a little bit? If you're going to be the Attorney General of the United States, even if you believe that she should have been locked up, and he was, people got so angry that he didn't sign on to the lock her up. As an Attorney General, part of your job is to be fair, judicious. Part of your job is to look at the evidence and then make decisions based on the rule of law and applying the evidence to what the law happens to be. And when he says lock her up, you're basically concluding she's guilty. Now, I can do that. You can do that. But if you're trying to get confirmed in that position, it wouldn't be wise to do that. We already know he's critical of Robert Mueller's investigation because he stated so publicly in a memo. No, it doesn't mean that when he says it's not a witch hunt, I don't think he'd be capable of that. He still didn't like the investigation. And I think he made very clear yesterday, William Barr, that he's under no obligation, according to DOJ guidelines, to ever release any of that information. Said he would release everything that's possible to the public based on DOJ, you know, protocols and guidelines. Well, they say basically you don't release that information, but we'll see. That's a different issue for a different day. But, you know, at the center of a lot of this, especially with the FBI and the Department of Justice, the center of all of this, even, is James Comey. I mean, as Comey instructed the guys that were writing the exoneration of Hillary, they did that in May. They didn't interview her till July. It was him saying that, well, no real prosecutor would ever prosecute these crimes. Excuse me, every prosecutor. There's not an American citizen that would have deleted emails the way Hillary did and bleach bit the hard drive to clean it completely so that you can't retrieve the emails from the hard drive. Like when you delete things, you think they're gone. But most computers actually save everything. And there are ways to retrieve lost emails. And these experts are really good at retrieving them. Now, that's why bleach bit was created, so that you wipe it clean. And not like with a cloth either. You wipe it clean, meaning the data.
What, like with a cloth or something?
I don't know.
I mean, that was one of the great moments of all time. So now you've got the walls are closing in here on James Comey. And I'm telling you, he's in trouble. James Comey is in legal trouble at this hour. James Comey, who signed. Now, think about this. He signed the first FISA warrant, we're told. Think of all the people that signed these FISA warrants, because the bulk of information was the Steele dossier that Hillary Clinton paid for. Now, they have an obligation. We just played Rod Rosenstein to actually verify and corroborate the information. They didn't do it because if they did it, they would have found out what we now know, that it's debunked. It's inaccurate. They purposefully didn't tell the FISA court judges that this was bought and paid for by Hillary Clinton, that the money she used, she funneled through a law firm that hired a op research group, that then hired a foreign national, that then used foreign sources in Russia to put these lies together. Anyway, so now James Baker, the FBI general counsel, he's under a criminal investigation. That's James Comey's general counsel. James Comey's deputy FBI director, second in command, Andrew McCabe, he is under a criminal investigation. And you got his top investigator, the guy that was co-authoring the exoneration of Hillary and did the Hillary interview, also involved in the Flynn interview, also involved in initiating the Russia witch hunt immediately after they exonerated Hillary. Look, if they had followed the law, and we now know there was internal debate within the FBI, if they had followed the law, she would have been indicted. She then would no longer have been able to carry on as the presidential candidate for the Democratic Party. But Strzok, who interviewed her and wrote the exoneration with Comey, again, working for Comey, everything gets back to Comey now. He thought that Clinton should win $100 million to zip. Same with his girlfriend, Lisa Page. And both Page and Strzok, interestingly, then they went to work for Robert Mueller. Then Robert Mueller conveniently cleaned their cell phones. You know, I guess every American has the right to clean their cell phone anytime they want. I guess every American should, you know, be cleaning cell phones. Why didn't they save those cell phones? That could have had a lot of evidence on there. You know, we were only able to forensically get back some of them thanks to the Inspector General, Michael Horowitz. So, you know, look at all these people, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Baker. Then you got his chief of staff, Rybicki, who resigned. And now we know that Comey's general counsel. We got all these people around Comey now potentially are going to face criminal charges. And something Comey himself admitted to, but don't forget, one of the big issues they're looking into now is who leaked what, when, and where. Well, Comey's already bragged about his leaking about the president to the media, to a close friend, a Columbia professor, who brought that information, as per Comey's request, to the New York Times. Okay, that too could be, he could be guilty of a crime on. And what do all these people have in common? They all wanted Hillary to win. They all hated and continue to hate Donald Trump. They all work together to rig our political system. They all work together to rig an election, to fix the outcome of the 2016 election by using their positions to help Hillary get elected. And as we now know, that they even had an insurance policy in case they lost. You know, it's like if you're 40 and have a heart attack, and a media leak strategy in case Clinton didn't win. And hence, this is what the whole Russian narrative has been about. This is about vengeance. And then after Comey was fired, what do we see? His deputies, his top officials that love him so much, out of their anger and malice, emotion, without any evidence, without any probable cause, without any reasonable suspicion at all. Well, maybe the reason the president fired Comey is because maybe Putin wanted him to fire Comey. They make up a conspiracy out of whole cloth and begin a counterintelligence investigation, which is not within their purview. Now you know why all the rank and file field agents in the FBI are so angry, because they know all of this. If they did it, they'd be in deep trouble. Glenn Greenwald, I think, pointed out rightly, the FBI's investigation into Trump is a lot like J. Edgar Hoover. Remember, Hoover served as the FBI director for decades and became infamous for his aggressive investigations into people he didn't like or people he suspected had ties to the former Soviet Union, and even suspected FDR's vice president, Henry Wallace. He subjected him to a lengthy probe and surveillance simply because Hoover disagreed with Wallace's Cold War policy. The FBI should not be in the business of investigating political differences, policy differences, personal opinions. And yet they obviously thought that they knew better than us, than we the people. And this 2-year conspiracy to undo a duly elected president, and that continues today, is a direct result of rogue upper echelon, highly powered individuals deciding they know better than we know. Now, William Barr, the next attorney general, you know, hopefully he'll bring equal justice under the law back into our purview. Maybe he's not going to give these guys a pass, because there's a lot of people, Comey, McCabe, Yates, Rod Rosenstein, all likely committing fraud on a FISA court. Think about that. How do you get to go to a court? Would any of you listening to this program bring material in front of a judge. You know what one of the rules in life is? You go before a judge, you say, yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, your honor, no, your honor, and then you better shut up. And one thing you don't do is lie to them. You lie to them, you're dead, because they have all the power in that situation. But you think about it, this was systematic fraud, lies perpetrated not once but four times on FISA court judges that literally took away the civil rights, you know, one of our most basic fundamental rights, which is against unreasonable search and seizure and warrants. And they did it knowingly so. If they knew this was false and yet it became the bulk of that application, that's anyone who knew it and signed their name to it goes to jail. These people, if William Barr does his job, all of these people will go to jail. All of them. I'm just telling you, it's bigger than a boomerang in a lot of ways. You'll see as this now continues to unfold. So, you know, if Barr ends up doing his job, and I understand, I was reading a lot of social media, and when he made comments about, well, I didn't like when, you know, lock her up, he can, as attorney general, rush to judgment. We don't want an attorney general that would rush to judgment. Now, we know what Hillary did, so we understand it, but he has not officially investigated it. But he said he would, which is a very important part, said he would investigate FISA and FISA abuse. You know, if we're going to look at the abuse of power, you know, all these people today ought to be concerned. If I'm James Comey, I would be concerned that I'm in legal jeopardy today. We know that there is a criminal investigation into both Baker and McCabe. McCabe, the former deputy FBI director. McCabe, the general counsel for Comey. Strzok, all his nonsense. He should be worried today, as Lisa Page should be worried today, as Bruce Orr should be worried today, because they use their high positions in our federal government to literally persecute people they politically disagreed with. And you can't forget about lying to the FBI is such a big deal. Well, we know Baker is looking into that as a charge with him, but that would also bring in people like Brennan and Clapper. How many lies have they told? Take a quick break. Smoking is not about politics. It's about people. There are 34 million Americans that smoke. But for me, Juul was a game changer. Because you switch to Juul, it's simple, it's satisfying, and no more smell. I watch people all the time. They run outside in the freezing cold and can be grabbing their cigarette. Well, with Juul, you'll take a quick puff and you're good. That's it. Now, Juul is designed with smokers in mind. From its form to technology, it's easy to use, no buttons, no switches. And the goal of Juul is to impact the lives of adult smokers by providing a satisfying alternative. Switch to Juul. You'll wish you had done it a long time ago. To discover the smoking alternative that is nothing like any e-cig vape you have ever tried, go to this website, juul.com/switch America. That's juul.com/switch America. Warning, this product contains nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. juul.com/switch America. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. One of the things that's going to get very, very entertaining, you're going to want to maybe buy a big popcorn machine as the 2019 Democratic primaries now begin to kick in, and who's going to get in, who's not going to get into the race, etc. You know, because this is going to be a race to the most radical leftist socialist wing in the Democratic Party. And I think they'll go so far, they'll never be able to recover. You know, they usually say that you tend to move a little bit to the middle after you get your nomination. I don't think it's possible with some of the people we're talking about. Now, we did have a couple of things. I'll give you one example. The rock star of the Democratic Party now, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. You know, she already day one, she wanted to support Trump's impeachment. Calls to occupy every airport, border, and ICE office. Actually called for that. Bernie Sanders, you know, looks like a conservative compared to Ocasio-Cortez. And, of course, she's her supporters understand socialism. Medicare for all is cheaper than Obamacare. Not true. Even the liberal news media is calling her out on the cost of all of the plans that she's put together. The upper middle class America doesn't exist anymore. That's not true either. You know, she doesn't answer how to pay for her $40 billion platform. How are you going to pay for all this? And doesn't and then, of course, she wants to defeat global warming like we defeated Nazis. We have a cut of her saying that. She can't name three branches of government on top of all of this. That's a little scary. And, you know, even I think Nancy Pelosi's afraid of her. I think Nancy Pelosi knows that her speakership is hanging in the balance because of the radicals that are in her party. And there could be a change in leadership within the next 2 years. That's why Nancy Pelosi, I'll give you a dollar for the wall. And Ocasio-Cortez, the goal of zero carbon emissions, no fossil fuels in 12 years. Okay? It's the lifeblood of every economy. How did Solyndra work out for us? Not that well. A waste of taxpayer money. Which, again, the media didn't care about the quid pro quo in that particular case. She wants a 70% tax on the super wealthy. How do we define super wealthy? That's like Comrade de Blasio saying there's a ton of wealth in New York. It's just in the wrong hands. Well, did they steal it? Were they drug dealers? Are these ill-gotten gains of people that have money? Now, I know some people that have money in my life. I know some people that have moderate incomes in life. I know people of all socioeconomic backgrounds in my life. I know some people that work 19 hours a day every day and don't stop. Now, maybe, and I know people that only want to work 5-6 hours a day, and they do. They want to live a better life. They've made the choice of living a better life, but they don't make as much money as those people that work 18 hours a day. Now, we're going to say, oh, we're going to punish you for deciding, making the choice to work 18 hours a day. What about the people that, you know, spent all those years going to law school, medical school? You know, think of, all right, to become a doctor, 4 years of college, 3-4 years of medical school, internships, residencies, and one day you want to start an office, but you're starting out with $500,000 in debt, student loans to pay for your education, unless you were lucky enough to have parents that were able to pay for it for you, but most people take out loans. They got to pay all that money back. Then if they want to start a business, well, now you're talking they're in their late 20s or early 30s. Now they want to start a business. Okay, well, they have to have money for that. They want to start a practice. And then let's say their work life is intense just to pay back the loans. That's going to take a long time. Then if they get a business, then they have to pay rent and then they have to hire people, and then they look at the equipment a doctor needs to put in their office, depending on what type of medicine is being practiced, or a dentist. You know, those dentist chairs are really expensive. Okay, well, you got to pay for them. Maybe take loans out on them. Then you got to start getting patients in those chairs, and that takes maybe marketing money. Then you got to pay the light bill. Then you got to pay the maintenance people. Then you got to pay this person and that person and the dental hygienist and the assistant. I mean, it's not easy to it's not easy. I don't know anybody that has it easy in life. Life's not supposed to be easy. You know, it's the whole story of The Road Less Traveled. Great bestseller, self-help book, F. Scott Peck. Life is hard. Once you recognize that truth, that life is hard, it actually gets easier because you're accepting a truth about life. I love how Ocasio-Cortez compared herself to FDR and Lincoln. Call me a radical. Democrats have compromised too much, she says. And she goes on from there, defending her stance on socialist policies and, you know, false spending statistics. Two of the top contenders for the 2020 presidential nomination for the Democrats have abandoned plans to participate in the so-called Women's March, which is the marquee event of the anti-Trump resistance. amid growing concerns that several of the march's key organizers are virulent anti-Semites. Washington Times reporting the DNC delivered a devastating blow yesterday by dropping their affiliation with the Women's March. This would be the third annual. Remember the first one? We have really famous people like Madonna. Wasn't that the Women's March? And Ashley Judd. And I think an awful lot about blowing up the White House. I'm not going to play it now. Anyway, DNC released a statement saying they stand in solidarity with those fighting for women's rights, but they offered no explanation for their decision, nor did Kamala Harris. We now know she wants to run for president. Kirsten Gillibrand of New York, she's now planning on running for president. They're not attending this year's march. Gillibrand's decision to abandon the march has to be particularly disappointing for the event supporters. Gillibrand called the 2017 march the most inspiring, transformational moment I've ever witnessed in politics. The movement happened, she wrote, in Time Magazine tribute to the march because four extraordinary women, Tamika Mallory, Bob Bland, Carmen Perez, Linda Sarsour. She's going to have a lot of explaining, Sarsour explaining it coming up in her future, had the courage to take on something big, important, and urgent and never gave up. And Tamika Mallory's refusal to denounce Louis Farrakhan during an appearance on The View earlier this week seemed to accelerate the slide in support. And all these people, now they invite pretty radical people into their life. Now, this is not going to please government employees that are furloughed, but an overwhelming majority of the American people say they're not impacted at all by the government shutdown, nor will they be. But I think at some point, though, the impasse is going to have to, I think with the president, I don't care how the president gets the money. If the president declares a national emergency, or if the president just says to the Pentagon, he's the commander in chief, and says to where we can't have 90% of heroin coming across these borders. It's a national emergency. We can't continue to allow human and drug trafficking at our borders. This has to stop. This is an issue of national defense. I'm sure they'll sue in California and then appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and it's going to take a long time. But if it's a national emergency, there ought to be a way to expedite the judicial process. Let's see. Oh, by the way, the woman congressman who called Trump that MF-er that we're going to impeach, pictured with an activist who called people who are Jewish Zionist terrorists and says Israel has no right to exist. This is your modern Democratic Party.
People love you, and you win. Woo. And when your son looks at you and says, Mama, look, you won, bullies don't win. And no. I said, baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker.
Yeah, that's Tlaib. Unbelievable. Then you have, you know, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi. I'm telling you, the old guard Democratic, even hardcore liberals like Schumer and Pelosi are scared to death of the people that have just been elected in their own party. You know, we got Ocasio-Cortez announcing she'll vote to defund ICE, saying it is systematically violating human rights. Remember Stacey Abrams ran for the gubernatorial seat in Georgia? Now wants to run for the Senate. She says it's perfectly okay if illegal immigrants start voting. You got to be kidding me. Then we've got, as the head of the Financial Services Committee, Maxine Waters, literally threatening, we will do to you what you did to us. Remember that? Now, apparently, she'll partner with Ocasio-Cortez. And that's going to be interesting to watch over time as well, because, you know, we now know that Maxine Waters is taking the reins of one of the most powerful committees. And in an interview after they won, she said, the most important thing is we'll be able to basically define who we are, what we care about, and the kinds of issues that we intend to be successful with or without the president, and perhaps with a new president in 2020. Banking industry has been benefiting from deregulation efforts under Trump. She basically has plans to undo everything the president has done, but she doesn't have the power to do it. But if they get the House and Senate one, they have the House and Senate one day and get the presidency, this would all happen. Got a newly elected Democratic congresswoman inviting the activists that wanted Israel eliminated to the swearing ceremony. Wow, swearing-in ceremony. You know, think of Comrade de Blasio of New York. Brothers and sisters, why didn't he just say comrades? Should have said comrades. Plenty of money in this city. It's just in the wrong hands.
Millions of people in this city, tens of millions across the country, are boxed into lives that just aren't working for them. You haven't been paid what you deserve for all the hard work. You haven't been given the time you deserve. You're not living the life you deserve. And here is the cold, hard truth. It's no accident. It's an agenda. An agenda that's dominated our politics from Reaganomics to the Trump tax giveaway to the wealthy and corporations. Here's the truth. Brothers and sisters, there's plenty of money in the world. There's plenty of money in this city. It's just in the wrong hands.
Well, how did people, well, maybe if are these ill-gotten gains? Do people cheat, steal, sell drugs to get that money? Most people I know, they get money the old-fashioned way, that you work for it. So he's basically saying it's in the wrong hands. Give us your money. We'll redistribute it to this other group of people that'll keep us in power indefinitely. Say goodbye to liberty, freedom, free markets. Well, what did you want to say, Linda?
Oh, I just wanted to renew my challenge to both Bill de Blasio and Cuomo.
What's that?
That they should forfeit their salaries to the good people, their brothers and sisters.
Their comrades.
Their comrades, their friends. Because clearly they haven't earned their money. I mean, I know for damn sure Bill de Blasio hasn't. So I think he should just forfeit his salary the way our great president doesn't take a salary. Mm-hmm. And I think that they should give it up. And I think they should also give their homes over to eminent domain. And we should let all of the sanctuary.
Well, he wants to take over apartments from people that.
Well, we should start with his and his children and his family. Let's start with your family first. Let's test it out and see how it works. Because I think it's going to go over fantastically.
I think they should lead by example.
Absolutely.
Maybe they should adopt an illegal immigrant.
And they should let them live in their homes and leave all their doors unlocked and give up their salaries. It'll mm-hmm. be fantastic.
Or maybe you're right. Maybe they can move out of their homes.
Yeah, they should live somewhere else because they don't really deserve to live there, especially Cuomo and de Blasio.
By the way, did you hear our friend David Webb?
Oh, my God. Best audio of the day.
Let's play the audio
I've
of the day.
I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get into.
Ariva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
Whoopsie-daisy. But I love David. The way he said it is, you should have been better prepped. David's a great guy. All right, we got to take a quick break here. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of this extravaganza. All right, a lot of ground to get to. We'll have Hannity Watch on the Deep State. Big breaking news tonight at 9 on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Also be joined by Jordan and Meadows. They have some news they're going to be breaking as well. I think a lot of the names that we are talking about are going to be in deep trouble by this time tomorrow. We'll have Hannity Watch, the latest on the government shutdown, Hannity Watch on the border, and Hannity Watch on socialism. And what did you think of that Gillette ad? We'll talk about that in our news roundup hour. Much more straight ahead.
We know Bruce Orr was giving information to the FBI. We know Christopher Steele was giving information to the FBI. We also learned today that there was another source giving information directly to the FBI that dealt with the Russian investigation. So we felt that was important. There's some other good information we got on some other issues that, again, we hope this transcript will get out soon. So, I mean, the kind of information that the American people need to know. And they need to know it as soon as possible. So this was, in my mind, maybe the most informative, I think Mark would agree, the most informative and best deposition we've had yet as far as learning new things and confirming some of the concerns and suspicions we had for a long time.
What Jim said is probably the most informative interview that we've had to date. Some of the things that were shared were explosive in nature. I mean, I couldn't believe that I was hearing some of the testimony that here in the United States that the DOJ and FBI were involved with based on that without sharing details. We did learn one other thing, and that is based on some testimony today, some of the footnotes, FISA footnotes that were in the Democrat memo were inconsistent with the testimony we heard today, which would shed light on perhaps the FBI knowing more about the potential bias and motivations behind those sharing information.
So you were in the deposition with James Baker, the first one, and you're going to be with him this upcoming Thursday. What do you want to get from James Baker this week?
Well, first of all, remember who this is. This is the FBI chief counsel. All kinds of things flow through him. So when he says that he believed Rod Rosenstein was serious about this alleged statement about recording the president, you got to take that with the weight that it comes with, because it's the FBI chief counsel. So we're going to ask him more about that. Our previous deposition was cut off early. We ran out of time, so we need him back in there where we're going to ask more about that specific meeting that took place, and then his conversations with people who were in that meeting, how those went, and who all he talked to. So all those things need to be asked.
And there's going to be more big breaking news tonight. We'll be breaking at 9 Eastern on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Now, that was Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows of the Freedom Caucus. And those were their comments after they had a behind-closed-door meeting, an interview with James Baker. We now know James Baker is under criminal investigation. He was the chief counsel to Jim Comey's FBI, his deputy FBI director. We now know, similarly, Andrew McCabe is under a criminal investigation. And I think with the news that is going to break tonight on the Fox News Channel, I think there's going to be a lot of other people that are going to be under a criminal investigation in pretty short order, assuming that the new attorney general does his job. And joining us now to discuss this and much more, Jim Jordan of Ohio and Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina. Welcome both of you to the program.
Sean, great to be with you. Thanks so much.
All right. So Baker is the chief counsel, Comey's top attorney at the FBI. He's under criminal investigation, as is his deputy FBI director. And I think after tonight, we're going to find that a lot of these people are really in a lot of trouble. But let's go specifically to what did we learn in the Baker interview that you had behind closed doors?
Just well, that. Jim Baker. Go ahead, Mark.
No, go ahead, Jim.
Well, Jim Baker is the subject of an investigation by the U.S. attorney in Connecticut. That was news to us. There have been rumors of that, but he is the subject of an investigation. We sent a letter, Mark and I did earlier this week, to Mr. Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to find out what's going on here. We want to know. We think this is important information. So that's one of the big takeaways. And, of course, the other one was that Jim Baker was getting information from a Perkins Coie lawyer, big Democrat lawyer who represents the Democrat Party, Mark Zussman. And so those are two. I mean, when you got the chief counsel to the FBI, who was the subject of an investigation, and also who got information from the Democrats' lawyer at Perkins Coie and took that information and gave it to the investigators at the FBI, and also the guy who's now pushing for this investigation into President Trump, I think that says a lot.
You said in your joint letter together that we know the DOJ and FBI departed from traditional investigative and prosecutorial practices and insufficiently adhered to the Foreign Intelligence Service Act, FISA. The committees learned that in some instances, high-ranking DOJ, FBI officials, including the FBI General Counsel James Baker, the DOJ Associate Deputy Attorney General Bruce Orr, took the self-described unusual step of inserting themselves into the evidentiary chain of custody. And during the course of our investigation, we interviewed the former FBI General Counsel Baker and discovered that your office is investigating him for unauthorized disclosures to the media, and you're asking for requests. Now, I'm beginning to get wind of the possibility that there is full-on evidence that everybody knew what became the bulk of this FISA application was fraudulent and that they knew it was bought and paid for. And they used it then anyway, never verifying, corroborating, and knowing its origins. That would mean anybody who signed off on it committed a conscious act of fraud against the FISA court. Wouldn't that be the case, Mark Meadows?
Well, it is the case, Sean. I think what we're seeing now is more and more information comes out, and Jim was exactly right. It's not only that you had the general counsel for the FBI, James Baker, getting information from a law firm that was representing the Democrat National Committee, but it was the way that they did it. I mean, even in those interviews, we found that James Baker, Bruce Orr, they did things only in the investigation of this president that have never been done before. And so when you start to treat this president differently than all other Americans, you know that bias is creeping in. And what we're finding is the predicate to the investigation, to the FISA application, was not only fraudulently done, but it was fraudulently renewed over and over and over again when they knew that it was based on a dossier that was not only unproven, but parts of it were disproven.
Mm-hmm.
It's problematic.
So wouldn't that mean that if now I don't know how you felt about the hearings yesterday. I had some mixed emotions. I do believe this was a witch hunt from the beginning. I think there's a lot of evidence to show that. Now we now know that they literally conspired out of whole cloth, a conspiracy that the firing of James Comey was collusion with the president and Vladimir Putin without a shred of evidence of anything. And that there was retribution pieces put in place, an insurance policy, a media leak strategy. This is after we now know that the FBI... what we really have here, if we're going to get to the bottom line here, we have people that hated Donald Trump, all of them.
Yep.
And what we had is they worked together to rig the outcome of our 2016 election, fix the outcome of the 2016 election, using their high positions to do so and help Hillary Clinton get elected, help her survive legally when she clearly obstructed justice and violated the Espionage Act, and then used her bought and paid for Russian lies to hurt Donald Trump as a candidate and then hurt him as a president, which has now gone on for 2 years.
Sean, here's the way I like to look at it. Who and when? So the New York Times had their big story, their blockbuster story that they said on Friday. You got to remember the who and the when. Who is the people we've been talking about? Andy McCabe, who's under investigation, Jim Baker, who's under investigation, and Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, who we know what the bias and the animus they had against the president. Those are the who.
Why aren't they under investigation?
Maybe they will be, and we don't know. But those are the who. And then when did this all happen? It happened in those critical 8 days between May 9th, 2017, when Jim Comey is fired, and May 17th, 2017, when Robert Mueller is named special counsel. Comey gets fired. Their best pal, Baker, McCabe, Strzok, and Page, their best pal, Jim Comey, gets fired. And now they're saying, oh, wait a minute. We're going to launch an investigation into the president. We're going to talk. And Rod Rosenstein comes in that same week. And what does Rod Rosenstein do? This is what we also learned from Jim Baker's deposition. Rod Rosenstein threatens to wear a wire to record the president and is talking about invoking the 25th Amendment and removing the president from office. This is happening at the highest levels of our Department of Justice, highest levels of the FBI. And this is what is so scary and so dangerous. And it all happened in that critical 8 days from people who way back the year before when they started this investigation had this extreme bias against the president. And we know that because we've seen the Page and Strzok text messages. That's who these people who had extreme bias and two other people who were under investigation, Andy McCabe and Jim Baker. And oh, by the way, two of those four people were also fired by the FBI. That is how bad it was.
When did they know about the dossier, and what did they know about the dossier? Because I'm getting some information that may prove that everybody knew the dossier was false from the get-go, but that means then they consciously presented a fraud before the FISA court. What would that mean for everybody, including Comey, Sally Yates, Rod Rosenstein, and the rest of them that signed off on it, if they knew that it was false and that Clinton paid for it and they committed a clear fraud, a conscious fraud on the FISA court? What would that mean for them?
Well, I think that certainly you have the potential for criminal offenses at at one case. But here's what you also have, Sean, and I think that this is what is so troubling. It's the bias that went from opening up the investigation to treating Donald Trump differently, the bias that was inherent there that even went further, that once they said, well, we need to cut down this communication the way that we do that because Christopher Steele is no longer a legitimate source. So what did they do? They went around it to the DOJ, got Bruce Orr to actually perpetuate it, but then it didn't even end there, Sean. It went further. What we believe and what we have proof of is that that bias continued to try to infiltrate every aspect of this investigation, including and not limited to the Mueller investigation that's going on now. You can look at some of the things that were happening back then, and different individuals certainly associated with the Mueller investigation are tainted by that same bias. It's just problematic.
Let's talk
Sean,
about
Bruce Orr. Bruce Orr met with Christopher Steele on July 30th. He opened the investigation, Crossfire Hurricane. They opened the investigation into President Trump at the end of July, July 31st. We think people remember the FISA doesn't happen. The application doesn't happen until October 21st. So Bruce Orr is our Justice Department high official is already talking with Christopher Steele, the author of the dossier, clear back the same time they opened the investigation.
But wait a minute, and it goes later than that too, because remember the communications between Christopher Steele and Bruce Orr, where Christopher Steele is desperately trying to funnel information to Robert Mueller through Bruce Orr, and Bruce Orr seemingly, based on the exchanges we've seen, wants to give Mueller the information that Christopher Steele, who was fired for lying and leaking, to Robert Mueller.
Without a doubt. I mean, we've got text messages that prove that. You're exactly right.
Prosperity cannot emerge from fear. Yet we have failed to secure our nations because members on both sides of the aisle have buried their heads in the sand over the last several decades, talking instead of doing. Americans are weary of our opinions and ready to see us do the job we were sent here to do. This isn't about numbers or statistics. It's about people. It's about Jared Vargas, a vibrant young college student studying computer science with dreams of working in the cybersecurity field. His life was cut tragically short when he was brutally murdered by an illegal alien in San Antonio last June. Jared's mother, Lori, his twin brother, and his younger sister don't care if I personally believe fences would be more effective than drones or vice versa. And they don't care if one of my colleagues believes that 2,028 homicide charges against illegal aliens in 2018 are not enough to justify a border wall. For them, one matters enough. The Vargas family does care that Jared's murderer had been in ICE custody twice, had been arrested for a DWI and released just a month before he killed Jared. This current debate before us has a face. It has a name. And that name is Jared. And his family wants justice for Jared. But it's also about the little girl, who today will be exploited by drug cartels who know that sex trafficking can be more lucrative than trafficking drugs. It's
All right, that's Chip Roy of the Freedom Caucus. I wish I had more time to play more of that. We continue with Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows are with us. All right, let's talk about the shutdown, what the answer is, and are Democrats going to break from Nancy Pelosi? I'll give you a dollar. And what should the president do?
Well, the president is staying strong, and he's doing that because he is not turning his back on the kind of people that Chip Roy was just talking about. And the other aspect, will Democrats eventually leave Nancy Pelosi? I believe they will. She is playing her cards all in a political manner, even today suggesting that the president should be disinvited for the State of the Union address, which I find just unbelievable that she would make that recommendation. It's a political stunt. It's something that shouldn't be accepted. But the president is staying strong. We applaud him in that. And the vast majority of Americans applaud him in staying strong.
And by the way, the Department of Homeland Security and Secret Service has said they are perfectly capable of protecting the president, as she tried to say it was about security, Jim.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, here we are. They won't even go show up at the White House when the president invites them to negotiate and work on a solution to get our border secure and build the border security wall. And now we have the Speaker of the House not inviting the Commander-in-Chief, the President of the United States of America, to give the State of the Union. This is the Democrats who are so focused on stopping the president instead of focusing on helping the country. And that speech at Chip Roy, by the way, John, I'm glad you played. Chip Roy is the newest member of the Freedom Caucus, a great member of Congress who understands what's at stake here.
Without the Freedom Caucus, we have no representation. We'll continue.
When you bring up an integrity issue, and it's interesting, you and the gentleman from Texas raised this in a way that almost, you know, approaches. It is insulting.
The gentleman, may answer the question.
What I'm saying, I am here under oath. I am not lying. I have never lied under oath, and I never will. And so the insinuation, not even the insinuation, the direct comment that you somehow say you have an integrity issue is insulting. I take offense. It is incorrect. Nothing I've said
here today.
I
never mentioned your personal life. I just simply said the amount of time that you were spending on the taxpayer's dollar, wasting it when you were supposed to be doing your job, texting back and forth to the court, is a problem.
And
the gentleman has already answered that.
You say you've known Mueller a long time. Would you say you have a close relationship with Mr. Mueller?
I would say we were good friends.
Would you say that you understand him to be a fair-minded person?
Absolutely.
Do you trust him to be fair to the president and the country as a whole?
Yes.
When his report comes to you, will you share it with us as much as possible?
Consistent with the regulations and the law, yes.
Do you believe Mr. Mueller would be involved in a witch hunt against anybody?
I don't believe Mr. Mueller would be involved in a witch hunt.
Now, I know there were two things specifically that got some people nervous that were watching the hearings yesterday. William Barr, by the way, 24 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN is our number. You know, is when he said it's not a witch hunt, number one, and number two, where he didn't go along or with the issue of lock her up or didn't know much about the Uranium One deal. That would be a third issue that people were concerned about. Now the question is he going to do his job? Because as we went over in great detail last night, we now have two of the top FBI management echelon under James Comey under criminal investigation. We have his general counsel, James Baker. There's now a criminal investigation into him. Andrew McCabe, the deputy FBI director, he, too, is under a criminal investigation. By the way, there's John Uber still looking out for the leak issue. That would mean Comey himself, he admitted he leaked his FBI memos about President Trump to the media vis-a-vis a close friend of his, a Columbia professor. And why? But for the very purpose of getting his friend Robert Mueller, I mean, a special counsel appointed. Then the issue is, you know, of all the people, if you add into this Page and Strzok and Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr and Comey and McCabe and all of them, they have one thing in common. In some cases, they actually helped Hillary Clinton remain in the race by exonerating what were obvious crimes of obstruction. If you don't believe she obstructed justice, well, when you get a subpoena one day of your emails and you delete them all and then you acid wash your hard drive with bleach bit and then you bust up your devices and rip out your SIM cards, I promise you, you're going to get arrested and charged and be found guilty of obstruction of justice. Never mind the Espionage Act, which forbids people from putting classified top secret information on a server, a private server, in the case that she did, that we all now believe at least six foreign intelligence agencies were able to hack into. You know, we all know all these people hate Donald Trump, hated him and still hate him. They all wanted Hillary to win. In one case, 100 million to zero. They all now, we know, worked in various ways to rig our political system in the lead up to the 2016 election by using their positions to help one candidate, Hillary Clinton, get elected and to undermine the candidacy of another candidate. And then even Hillary Clinton, talk about the Russia connection, we have one. Bought and paid for Russian lies with funneled money that she gave to a law firm that funneled to an op research group that hired a foreign national that used the Russian sources. And then they bring this, the bulk of information in four FISA warrant applications is the dirty Russian dossier of Hillary Clinton. They don't tell the court that she bought and paid for this. They don't tell the court that it's unverified and it's never been corroborated. As a matter of fact, most of it now has been debunked. And then one has to ask, is this abuse of power going to go on and happen and there'll be no repercussions? Because if that's the case, we don't have equal justice under the law. We have a dual justice system, one for the Clintons, one for the McCabes and Bakers and Comeys and Rubickis and the Pages and Strucks of the world, and one for the rest of us. And I'm not even talking about Susan Rice and Samantha Powers and Clapper and Brennan. Anyway, John Sale is with us, former federal prosecutor. He served in the ever prestigious Southern District of New York as and also served as an assistant special Watergate prosecutor. David Schoen is with us, civil liberties and civil rights criminal attorney. Thank you both for being with us. John, we'll start with you. What did you think of the hearings yesterday?
Well, I thought he did very well, but I would sum it up in two words, his testimony. He said, trust me. Those are my words. And I think that he has earned our trust. He's eminently qualified, talking about Mr. Barr, of course. And he said he will let Mueller continue his work, and he said there'll be no political interference, but he made it very clear that he is ultimately the boss, that he's got responsibility. And Sean, I'll tell you what I think he's going to do. What I would do is I think once he gets in there, and he'll be confirmed, and I think he'll get some Democrats to vote for him, and he'll come in and he'll say, I need to now get the facts. I think he'll call in Mueller, and he'll ask him, what's going on? What are you doing? How much time do you need? And I think Mr. Barr will say, if Mueller makes a good case, he'll say, okay, come back to me every month. If he says, on the other hand, I don't think you need to drag this out anymore, he'll bring it to a close. But the bottom line is, he's a private citizen now. When he gets in there, he's going to take charge. And one other thing, he's not going to recuse himself. Despite the fencing he did with Senator Harris, you can bet the farm that he's not recusing himself.
Well, I don't think he should recuse himself. And, you know, the thing is what really has frustrated me, John, throughout this process, we really do have Russian interference in the 2016 election that we can prove. And nobody has shown any interest in this. And we do have examples of FISA abuse. We do have clear obstruction of justice. If you were still an attorney in the Southern District of New York and you subpoenaed my emails and I decided I was going to delete them and I was going to clean my hard drive with bleach bit and I was going to bust up my phone devices and pull out the SIM cards, would you think that you would charge me with obstruction of justice?
Well, in my law practice, for years, I represent companies and individuals who get grand jury subpoenas for voluminous documents. First thing you do is you caution them not to delete, not to mess with any of those emails. And if anything like that happened, you can bet that person or company would be indicted before you can snap your fingers.
And found guilty. In a case like that, that's a slam dunk obstruction case, right?
Absolutely, assuming all those things happened.
And even if you have a great defense attorney like David Schoen in there, David Schoen couldn't get me out of that one, could he?
Well, it would be tough. Maybe he could, but he's the only one who could.
Yeah. I mean, and this is the point. Now we have the top people around Comey under full criminal investigation. I think when all is said and done, if there is equal justice, wouldn't that mean Page, Strzok, Comey himself, Bruce Orr, and a bunch of other people can be expected that they're going to be fully investigated on some of these criminal matters, this abuse of power? What about all those people that signed off on a FISA application, having never, ever even attempted to verify or corroborate its contents, never telling the FISA court judges that it was a political document bought and paid for by the other candidate? To me, that's a fraud on the court. By the way, would I get in trouble for a fraud on the court, David Schoen?
Yeah, absolutely. But listen, I think part of the problem right now is that all of the investigations of all of those people you just named, which all must go forward, should be under one umbrella. They're spread out now. You've got Durham on one case, you've got Huber on another case, and it's sort of divide and conquer. I don't think that's the way to go about it. And furthermore, thanks to your show, you're starting to uncover even more facts. Just when you thought you had all of the dirty facts, more. Yeah, these congressional hearings are showing now there was a so-called verification file, Dragon file, nobody knew about, nobody still knows about or has seen. Let's see it. Let's see what that looks like. The misconduct is unbelievable. There really was a cottage industry in Stop Trump going on at the Justice Department. We've never seen anything like this before. And when we see now about the investigation decision that was made after Comey fired, I hate to say this. I don't like to be overly dramatic. This is the closest in my lifetime I've seen to something that could be called a coup.
Or at least an attempt. Well, think about this, John. I mean, Hillary's exoneration was written before the investigation. The Espionage Act is clear. You can't have in a mom-and-pop shop bathroom closet server with top secret or classified information on it. She did have that there, and she lied about that. Then the whole deletion issue. Then she funnels money through a law firm into an op research firm, hires a foreign national, gets Russian lies that she pays for. Now, those lies were leaked to the American people. Doesn't that sound like she's trying to influence the American people before a vote with Russian lies? Well, it sounds like collusion in a way. And then, of course, that information is the bulk of information is used as the basis for FISA warrant applications. And these high ranking officials did nothing to verify it. I mean, would you ever present before any court something you didn't verify or corroborate or know to be true?
Well, I mean, no officer of the court would do that knowingly. But I think everything you've just said should be the subject of a full, fair, and complete investigation, just like Mueller is doing involving the president. But I want to emphasize the word fair, that the president is entitled to a fair investigation. And the ultimate decision, one of the decisions that Attorney General Barr will have to make, will be what happens to the report. And that's where I think the president, through his counsel and the White House counsel, have a right to be heard, have a right to assert any objections, and have a right to respond to it. And I think that would be fair.
He actually said, and as part of the Justice Department's policy, that once these matters are finished, they usually don't make them public. He said that very clearly yesterday.
Well, he said he's going to make as much public as he can, subject to the rules and regulations. And for example, grand jury material, that is prohibited by Rule 6E, the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure. There could be national security information. But I think, again, you have to make a judgment. Everybody does, if you trust Bill Barr to do the right thing.
What do you think of this whole thing where James Comey's fired, and then you have these high-ranking officials saying, oh, with no evidence at all, no probable cause even, not a scintilla of evidence, they just decide, well, maybe the reason Comey was fired because he was doing Putin's bidding. They had already been investigating at that time 9 months into so-called Trump-Russia collusion, and Lisa Page, Peter Strzok, James Comey, and McCabe all said they had nothing at that time.
And I agree with David, and I say this very cautiously. It almost is verging on a coup. The very thought of suggesting that the president, because he fired Comey, was acting in the Russia, the Putin's bidding, my questions would be, what's the predicate for that, and who in the Department of Justice approved it? Something like that could not be done based upon at that level. Who approved it and what was their agenda? And that is something that I think the American people are allowed to know. If that was true, Sean, why didn't they go immediately to the Joint Chiefs and say the president is engaging in espionage? I mean, it is
because there was no evidence of it.
Because it's outrageous. That's the point.
Let me give the last word here to our friend David Schoen. David.
So not one of these reporters has asked the president, are you a Russian agent or have you ever been, believes in any way that the president ever has acted for Russia. And by the way, would it be so terrible if the president, before he became president, determined that he would like this country to have better relationship with Russia than we've had in the past? We had the single worst foreign policy before this administration that we've ever had in the history of this country. There's a lot of repair work to be done, but through strength. That's the president's approach, I believe. The idea that he was acting as an agent for Putin or Russia is absurd, and it's irresponsible for the journalists to even ask that question.
All right,
and they know it.
David Schoen, John Sale, thank you both for being with us. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. We'll have a lot more on this tonight, 9 Eastern.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
911, what is the address?
Murray Hill, West Broad Street. Somebody's OD'ing in a red car.
What is he overdosing on?
I think heroin.
My neighbor and her sister both overdosed on heroin.
The suspect in a series of brutal crimes is a gang member and illegal immigrant who's been deported 4 times.
America's overdosed.
overdose crisis worse than ever before because of the synthetic opioid fentanyl. It is deadlier than heroin.
The overdose deaths have almost doubled from this time last year.
The synthetic opioid fentanyl is causing carnage like America has never seen.
Overdoses are now the leading cause of death for Americans under the age of 50.
Start out with this idea of crisis. The president used that word several times in the speech.
Just because you say it's a crisis, George, doesn't necessarily make it one.
Suffolk County Police announcing the arrest of 17 gang members after a series of violent incidents, including the massacre of four young men.
If heroin's the epidemic, fentanyl's the plague, and the plague is here.
The process, by the way, feels like a colossal waste of time, so he can deliver on a chant he began 3 years ago at some of his rallies. It's all about nothing.
We have thousands of new aliens entering our country every day, and this surge of illegal immigrants flooding across our porous borders puts our nation at risk in more ways than one. In 2017 alone, more than 900 Americans died every week from the opioid-related crisis and overdoses. Every American, everyone in this chamber, knows personally someone who has been affected by this, be it a family member, a friend, a coworker, a neighbor, where the opioid crisis has penetrated into these lives and its advancement continues to march down the streets of our nation.
And angel moms and dads that tried to meet with Nancy Pelosi, they were pushed aside yesterday because Nancy didn't have time to meet them. The manufactured crisis where they lost their kids to illegal immigrants, most of whom were in the criminal justice system. And again, sanctuary state policies like Nancy's state of California protect criminals from being handed over to ICE, where they would therefore, if the law was enforced, be deported back to their home countries. But of course, it's a manufactured crisis. You want to tell that to the moms and dads that lost their kids to illegal immigrants? You want to tell that to the 10,000 plus sexual assault victims or the 100,000 assault victims and the homicide victims? I mean, it's unbelievable. Now, 90% manufactured crisis, right? 90% of heroin, which now we do have an opioid crisis where we have literally one death every 7.5 minutes. We have 192 deaths on average every single day, over 72,000 deaths annually. And it's getting worse. It's to the point now where there was an article on CNBC yesterday that Americans are more likely to die from an opioid overdose today than a car accident. It often happens where, you know, kids especially, they get a hold of Percocet, Vicodin, OxyContin. Maybe mom, dad, grandma, grandpa had some type of medical procedure. They start taking the pain pills. They begin to like the pain pills, and they buy pain pills that are very expensive on the streets. Some cases, I hear it's as high as $80 a pill. Then they can't afford it. And then one of their dumb genius friends, you know, say, oh, why don't you just try this? It's better. And it's heroin. That's coming 90% of it from Mexico, our southern border. So it is a real crisis. You know, it's an honor to have on the program. I'm going to tell you a story that you may not know about Mike Lindell. He's obviously an advertiser on this program. We love having him. MyPillow is the best product I've ever had in terms of sleeping. And they have the new MyPillow mattress topper, which I love. But what you might not know about Mike Lindell is 10 years ago today, he was addicted to crack cocaine and alcohol. It had gone on many, many years in his life, and he got clean and sober, totally clean and sober now the last 10 years. He goes around the country, and he gives a lot of talks about addiction and how to get out of addiction. The opioid recovery rate is extremely low. You become addicted to heroin, your odds are about 15%, some of the lowest odds of addiction. Anyway, Mike is with us today. How are you, sir? 10 years sober, clean and sober.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. This is amazing. It's been amazing 10 years, I'll tell you. If you'd have told me where I'm at today 10 years ago, I would have said, what?
Well, let's talk about how deep your addiction was. When did you first start with drugs? And how did you get addicted to crack?
Well, I'm going to take it back. And now I know a lot more now than I did back then. And, you know, a lot of addictions, or I would say most, come from, these seeds are set in childhood. And it can be a trauma. It can be a wound. Mine was my parents divorced when I was 7 years old. And I ended up getting put into a new school. I was had an unworthiness spirit, you know. I think fatherlessness nowadays leads to addiction. And anyway, I was, I would either show off or I would be very shy. People don't know that. They're going, Mike Lindell, shy. Oh, yeah, I was very shy. I would do stuff like climb out bus windows to show off and jump, you know. Then you got into the 80s, and I tried this drug. I mean, I was 20-some years old, 22, 23. I drank before then, but all of a sudden I tried cocaine, and I'm going, wow, I can talk to people. It was this false courage, and I was a very functioning cocaine addict. I even had a bar, some bars, small-town bars, not a good place for an addict. But this went on through the 90s, and then I switched to crack. And now, when the crack came, you know.
Well, let me slow you down a little bit. So you're in your early 20s, and you had alcohol. Did you ever smoke pot, for example, or not? You weren't.
No,
that
no,
wasn't. Okay, so you drank alcohol, and then you try powder cocaine. And how quickly did you become addicted?
Like the first line. I mean, it was. Like
you liked one, it. It changed you that quickly. All right. So
yeah.
And then to explain the. The process, like, did you have to have it the next day? Did you?
No, cocaine and every drug has its own, when I do my talks now and stuff, you know, every drug has its own downfalls and things that you like about it. But cocaine, it was like, it just made me more, you know, more talkative, more boisterous. I felt I could interact more. I was accepted more. I could hide it good. And like I say, it was a very functioning addict. There wasn't a big craving to get more. You just wanted it because it would change me into this false courage.
How soon after you tried it the first time were you using it every day?
Oh, that probably... It would go on, you got into, you know, a couple, two, three years or whatever, where then it became, not I'd say every day, you might do it 3-4 days in a row, and then you wouldn't do it for 2 days or 3 days. You'd have this regret, and it would be a cycle.
Right. And when did you first then try crack cocaine? How did that happen?
Crack, you know, I've tried, there was a friend of mine came down from up north. I was in Minnesota here, and after the bars were closed, we'd always go over to my friend's house, and it came to our town, the crackhead, when you make cocaine, you have to have baking soda. It's cooked. It's a process, and it changes it into a different drug, which is called crack. Well, my friend was down, and I said, "Watch this!" And I put out these lines of cocaine, and these guys were grabbing their lines and going into their bedrooms and hiding out, and they wouldn't come out for like 20, 30 minutes. It's a very paranoid. They would go cook it, smoke it, and then you're very paranoid. Anybody that's been on crack, you stare out windows. You don't even know what's out there. It's horrific. Well, I told my friend, I said, look what's happened here in our town, you know, with these guys. And I said, boy, we're never going to let this happen to us. We made a pact. We ended up being the worst, too.
Right. In other words, we're never going to cook the cocaine. All right. So then you do your first hit of crack. And I've actually, you know, watched documentaries, and people say that first hit, they were addicted that from that second on.
With crack, Sean, it's if you get by, it's the second hit. If you dip that first hit, either you're hooked you quit because it scares you. It could be something you've never felt before. You get to that second one, you do a second one, and do it the second time, and I'd say 90-some% of the people, it's over. Even my dealers back then, they heard that I had smoked crack, and they looked at me, they go, you know what, you're never going to be able to get off it, you're never going to be able to go back to soft cocaine. And I'm looking at them and go, what are you talking about? And that particular drug, it turns on you, it gives you all, you know, you could, all of a sudden you could eat on it, and you could go to bed on it, and then you get, and all of it, then all of a sudden it changes. It's like they call it the devil's candy. It just turns on you, and then you can't to be able to function on crack. That's, you know, like I had bars then, any of the crack smokers would be at home staring out windows and looking through peepholes, and it's horrific. It's
so just, how many years were you addicted to crack?
From 2000, right around 2000, and then, like you say, 10 years ago today, I quit everything on January 16, 2009. So one of the things, you know, when I invented my pillow, I was still a full-blown addict, and they, but I put all my kind of my energies that, you know, my self-worth, I had a very low self-worth, and you can't get rejected if you don't talk to people. When I dove in to invent the pillow, it took, you know, a little over a year. And then once I got it invented, it was turned down everywhere, and we did a kiosk. Someone said, Mike, why don't you do a kiosk? Well, I couldn't sell to the people there because I'd be all paranoid. And so my wife at the time, she worked those days, and we borrowed our last dime. We didn't have anything left to do that money for the kiosk. And we had four kids. And I was there one day, and this guy bought a pillow for me. And he said, do you have a business card? I said, I'm all out. And I wrote it on a piece of paper. I didn't even know what one was. But that guy called me in January by a divine appointment. He called me up and he said, are you the guy that invented this pillow? And I said, Minnesota. He says, yeah. And he said, well, it changed my life. And he said, I run the Minneapolis Home and Garden Show. Would you like to do a show there? I'd love to have the product. It's the best product I ever tried. So I said, sure. And I went in there. I think I had to borrow money from friends or whatever just to get the booth money. But one thing happened where I put a table up between me and the people, and I could actually talk to them without being on drugs. And if I stepped out to go, I smoked back into. If I stepped outside to go have a cigarette, someone came up to me. I go, oh, I got to go. I was very, you know, I couldn't deal with people.
I have a couple more questions. We're going to ask you, Mike Lindell with us, of course, with MyPillow.com. Telling his story, 10 years now sober, and how he recovered from this, we'll get to next. We'll also have the other news of the day, news roundup, information and overload. The best thing you could do for yourself every morning is get up and get your daily dose of Black Rifle coffee. It's the best coffee you've ever had. They have great varieties. They have great flavor. This is a company that is literally built by American heroes that have served their country and first responders. And they hire heroes and first responders. And they donate to heroes and first responders. And the best part is, it is the best roast-to-order coffee you've ever had. And they always give a portion of their sales to veteran and first responder causes. And it is so worth trying this coffee. Not only are you helping a great group of people, but you're getting the best cup of coffee you've ever had in your life. And you know what? You want to cure a bad attitude? Okay, start your day the right way with Black Rifle Coffee. They have their website. They have a lot of fun stuff on the website. Go to blackriflecoffee.com/Sean. You'll get a 15% discount if you do. blackriflecoffee.com/Sean. The best cup of coffee you've ever had. And it's a conservative company with great guys, veterans, first responders that run it. blackriflecoffee.com/Sean, and you will never go back to those big liberal brands ever again. And as we continue, Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, of course, 10 years now clean and sober, was addicted to crack cocaine. At the worst part of your addiction, how many hits of crack were you doing a day?
Oh, I was doing it daily. Couple hundred dollars a day, easy. It got to the point the drug dealers did an intervention on me. I was up for 14 days, and they'd staged this intervention. I said, it was downtown Minneapolis, and I go, what are you guys doing? And they go, we're cutting you off. You've been up 14 days. And I finally, the last one, went to sleep. I went down to the streets of Minneapolis, and 2 o'clock in the morning, and nobody would sell me crack. I came back upstairs, and the one guy sitting up, he says, you know what? He says, give me that phone. I'm going to take your picture. He said, you've been promising us for years this pillow is just a platform for God, and you're going to come back someday and help us all get out of this addiction, and you're going to quit. He says, we're not going to let you die on us. And that guy works for me today, to this day.
Your former drug dealer works for you.
Yeah, 2 of them do.
When did you make a decision, and how did you get off this? Because a lot of people can't get off this stuff.
Yeah, you know, it was January 16, 2009, 10 years ago today, and I knew if I waited one more day, my calling would be gone, my purpose that God had planned for me. And I prayed that I would wake up in the morning and never have the desire again. And I did. I woke up the next morning, never, you know, the desire was gone. But then a couple months later, I actually went to a faith-based outpatient at my sister's church. And I walked in there. I'd been in different treatment centers throughout the 80s and 90s. But I walked in there and it was different. They said, "We're not here to talk about how much you did. We want to talk about your childhood. We want to talk about, you know, what." I said, "I had a fine childhood." And I said, "Well, I was divorced." And they said, "Let's talk about that." And things happen in childhood, from fatherlessness, divorce, trauma. Like veterans come back and they've been traumatized. This is people, they manifest into addictions, and that.
We'll pick it up right there. We'll hold you over a couple of minutes on the other side, and maybe some people that are struggling even today that are listening to this program, there's plenty of help out there. It's a matter of making the right decision for yourself and getting your life together. 800-941 Sean, more with Mike Lindell on the other side. Then the rest of the news of the day, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour. You know, in the midst of all the whining from the left and, you know, all the battles that we have, you have to wonder, you know, why in the world would anyone act this way? My guess is that probably most people are cranky. All right, 25 now till the top of the hour. 10 years clean and sober. Mike Lindell is with us. You know him, of course, from MyPillow.com and the best pillow ever made, and the MyPillow mattress topper now, which is selling out like I hear every day. And it's an incredible story because 10 years ago, he was addicted to crack cocaine and alcohol. But I didn't want to cut you short here. And just some final thoughts. How did you get clean and sober that day, which was January 16th, 2009? How did you do it?
Well, it was I'm going to spin this a little political too, Sean, too. I got out of it. It was a faith-based treatment center. And let me tell you right now, I'm going to throw in something here. The Democrats should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. I know where these drugs are coming from. They're killing people. I was just with the president a few months ago signing this amazing 800-page opiate bill. And I'll tell you what. We now know all these empty treatment centers that are faith-based, Salvation Army and Teen Challenge, the best places to get help in the country. And there's a lot more, too, that I have vetted. But we need to stop the opiates from coming in and then help the people that are here. It's like playing Russian roulette every day with.
But I bet you know many addicts from your time doing drugs for such a long period of time that died. Didn't you know people that died from this?
It's gotten way worse now. I know some people, and I don't even want to say on the phone, very close to me, that just died within the last year of opiates. I hear it all the time. I speak out. I was in Texas, 30,000 millennials, and in Minnesota here, 50,000 millennials. This epidemic is something.
So how did you quit that? How did you do what's so impossible for so many others once you get addicted?
Well, with God, all things are possible. But you need to get help in the faith-based treatment centers. And you need to, people, they need hope, Sean, too. You know, they need hope. And, you know, I hope my story brings a lot of people hope out there. But what I'm doing right now, my Lindo Recovery Network that I'm going to launch in about 3-4 weeks, I have all these stories I've gathered of people from around the country that have made it through. So you're going to put in your age and your addiction, and all the stories, your age and what you're addicted to come down. So you trust that hope because you're more of a match. And then I'm going to have all the centers over here that you can go get help to that I have vetted. And when you get out, I'm going to tell the public, I'm going to be there for you. I'm going to have paid mentors all over the country so we're going to follow them right from start to finish. But if you're out there right now and you're an addict, go to the Salvation Army or Teen Challenge. Salvation Army, they're donor based. You don't need a Rule 25. You can walk in there. It doesn't have money. It's like a roof over your head, and you're going to get the help you need. And I can't say that enough of how they're the best thing, best centers in the world. And a lot of them are at 50% occupancy because you need to have a rock when you get out of there, and that's God.
All right, Mike Lindell, phenomenal story. And look what, you know, it's possible. And, you know, for some people, and you can do it before you lose your life, before your kid loses their life. Everybody is worth hope and opportunity to get better. And it's such an insidious evil that takes over literally the soul and the minds and the hearts of people and destroys lives and kills them. Mike Lindell, thanks for sharing that story. Congratulations on 10 years being clean and sober. I saw the picture you put up on Twitter. I mean, it's unbelievable. You're a lot more handsome today than what you were looking like back in the day. But we appreciate you sharing that story with us. And we hope all these people that you're trying to help can get help. If we can ever help you in any way, let us know.
Thanks, Sean. Honor to be on your show. You're doing great work, and God bless everyone in the country. And let's get united and get that wall up now.
Well, 90% of heroin from there. Good point. Mike Lindell, MyPillow.com. Over to, that's a success story. Now, the problem is that is only if you're addicted to opioids, and now with this new fentanyl that they're putting in these drugs purposefully to make it even stronger. Problem with fentanyl is people that even, you know, hardcore addicts are dying from it that have a high tolerance for this stuff. They've been doing it for years. And nobody knows what's in any of these drugs when you buy them. You know, we've had my friend, you know, Eric Bowling on the program, and his son Chase, you know, bought a Xanax, didn't know it was laced with fentanyl, and he died with one Xanax pill. I mean, it can happen to you. And it can happen to your kids, no matter how many times you talk to them. It's one of the scariest things you know that's going on out there. But, of course, it's a manufactured crisis. Okay, we have more Americans now likely to die from an opioid overdose than a car accident. You know, opioids, car crashes, falling, the odds of dying in the U.S. Well, the odds of dying now are the highest. Opioids. And it's happening every 7.5 minutes, another death. You know, nearly 200 deaths a day, over 72,000 annually. I mean, these are real lives, real people all over the entire country. And these drugs are being fed to our kids at, you know, a $10 bag of heroin. And that's it. If you watch any of these programs, Drugs Inc. or Trade, they talk to the drug dealers. The drug dealers know. You do it once, they own you. They absolutely know it. Because they've seen it, and you can't stop on your own, certainly. And these treatment centers are there. Pretty scary times we live in. Anyway, news roundup, information overload hour. By the way, nobody in the news ever talks about any of the good news. Volkswagen is spending, what, $800 million in Chattanooga, Tennessee, on a plant that they have there. And new investment, 1,000 new jobs are going to be in Chattanooga. We have long-term optimism in terms of the economy continuing to rise. Long-term investor optimism is up. Latest UBS Investor Watch Pulse poll, 71% are more optimistic about the 10-year economic outlook than they were just 2 months ago when it hit a high then of 68%. 78% believe the economy's fundamentals are strong. 75% said they expect to reach their long-term goals. Now, we mentioned this earlier in the program. We have this Gillette ad that is out there. It is massive. The backlash on social media and the uproar of so many people that have seen this.
Dollar Shave Club. Dollar Shave Club.
Exactly. I watched this. You know, it's. I don't want to get into all the specifics. There are these brutish guys. You look, we know you can handle yourself.
I'm sorry. Are you looking at me?
I'm looking at you. And you know these guys in New York, for example, the old classic is a bunch of construction guys eating lunch, pretty girl walks by, and they get whistled at.
I love that. I'm like, thank you for paying attention. I didn't get dressed up for myself. Thank you for noticing. A woman or a man says I look nice. I say thank you.
But it's different. This is a different era. Now, there's brutish behavior. You know, guys touching women inappropriately. Then it goes all the way into the, you know, Weinstein category, abusing power to seduce people or even force people into sexual acts. You know, so there's fine lines. The problem with the ad is, why would they make that ad? Because they know they're going to piss off people. Okay, not every guy is like a stereotypical, you know, male chauvinist pig. And and then there's one scene in particular where one guy, and they want men to to confront each other over when they see, you know, they have one scene where a guy's looking at a woman and like, wow, she's really pretty. And he goes, stop that. You know, men and women do like each other. Men and women do want to meet other men and women. And men and women, you know, I've always believed that there's somebody for everybody. And men and women are attracted to each other. It doesn't have to be brutish or piggish, or it could be nice and kind and hi and how are you? You're right. Men do notice that women are attractive. I'm sure women notice if they think men are attractive, don't they? Has to be some attraction.
I'm just waiting for the backlash. It's like ridiculous. Like, I see women walk down the street all the time ogling men, saying inappropriate things. I don't see them making commercials about that.
They don't ever. It's never happened to me.
It happens to you all the time.
It does not happen to me all the time.
Yes, it does, because I've been on the road with you, and I've watched it happen.
Okay, I walk the streets of New York.
Just because you're oblivious does not mean it's not happening. They're two very different things.
You're creating an image that is false. I am an extremely aware person as I walk.
No, you're not. Not to that.
I've never gotten whistled at.
Yes, you have.
No, I have not.
I have been there.
I would tell you if I did.
No, you wouldn't, because you're oblivious. You're not paying attention to that. You're looking at your phone. You're reading an article. You're talking to somebody else, and so-and-so is behind you going, oh, my God, Sean Hannity, you look so much thinner in real life. And, oh, my God, you're so handsome.
I love
your show.
You look younger, taller, and skinnier in person. So
listen,
I'm fat,
not for nothing.
Old,
we all know.
And short on
the
TV.
The camera adds 10 pounds. We all know that.
That's absolutely list.
Right. So when they meet
15.
You in person and you're all sweet and nice and you sign everybody's hats and shirts and letters and books.
You know, there's a simple rule, and you can't go over every situation, but I think there's a simple, basic, fundamental rule. Be nice. You would want your own daughter. How would you want her treated? How would you want your sister or your mother treated? You would want them treated with the respect that they deserve. Now, it's okay if men are attracted to women. They are. It's a fact. Women are attracted to men. You don't have to go over there and you're really hot in the dress. You know, you'd sound like an idiot. And I think that it was a stereotype of that's how men are. And I think that has actually really pissed off a lot of their customer base, because it was, oh, this is how men are. That's not how every man is. There are respectful men out there that respect women, treat them kindly. Actually, I know guys that just worship women.
Listen, there's good and bad in every group. Men, women, every race, every creed, every gender. We all got problems.
Somebody told me about this show. I haven't seen it on Bravo, about some guy named John. And he's a serial. Have you seen the Kylie? Put your mic up. So apparently this guy is a serial hoodwinker manipulator of women, right?
He is. The program's called Dirty John. It's
Dirty
based
John.
On a true story.
And this guy, like,
preys on women.
Preys on women, says all the right things, has them fall in love with them, right? Has been married many times.
Yes, married many times, long extensive criminal record throughout many different
states.
So
what happens? He puts a full court press of charm on, gets these women that are rich to marry him?
Yes.
And then gets their money.
And then gets their money, usually abusing them. It ended, well, I don't want to spoil it for our listeners.
No spoiler alert here. Go ahead. You can spoil it.
But so he ends up attacking one of her daughters, and she ends up fighting him off in a parking lot, and she actually ends up killing him.
You know, but it's another thing, too. What happens on these social dating sites? Mark Simone, who's filled in on this program many times on our affiliate here in New York, WOR, he uses, and I think he talks about it on the air. I don't want to just disclose something that's not true. Linda, you'll know better than me, but he uses
what?
He uses those dating apps, right? Or at least when we was at our Christmas party, we were talking about
it. I would definitely call Mark a social butterfly.
Okay, Mark is and doesn't want to get married.
No interest in marriage.
Okay, but you have these dating apps, and the only you put your picture up there.
I've never done this. So
okay,
I've never done it either.
But you put your picture up, and somebody can like your picture, or you can like somebody else's picture. Then the person knows that you like their picture. If they like you back, then apparently you just meet strangers, and that's how people do it. Now, if you think about it, it's based entirely on looks. Whatever the picture is, you're attracted to that picture.
Oh, it's definitely personality. You can tell a lot from a person's
eyebrows.
Tell
a lot. Yeah, just the picture.
What a crock.
I think the biggest selling point is when you say major Sean Hannity fan, then you get all those likes from everyone.
You're such a liar. Everyone's on top. Why are you bothering me with all this stuff? But to me, that's pretty dangerous. because it's you don't know who this person is. You don't know anything about that person. I guess you can meet in a public place, meet, get pizza, get a cup of coffee, get a drink, whatever. But you're meeting somebody that you know nothing about. They can say anything about themselves, and nobody knows if it's true. So I think those apps are pretty dangerous, from my mind.
The same thing happens when you meet in a bar, though. You meet in a bar, a guy says his name is Jim, his name is Greg. He says he works at Citibank, he works at McDonald's. He now says he's not married, he's married with three kids.
And
Who knows? Some
of the apps are just known specifically as hookup apps. That if you're on that particular
app. That's a different agenda.
Okay, so in other words, I think you're pretty and I want to sleep with you. I think you're cute, I want to sleep with you. Boom. And that's what they go do.
I would guess. I know nothing about this.
You're lying. Why did you say that with a smile on your face?
Oh, you're right, Sean. I'm sorry. I'm actually very savvy in this
obviously.
Topic.
No, but that's what they have in these. To me, that's dangerous too. All right. It was great to have Mike Lindell. What an incredible story he had. All right, Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Big breaking news as it relates to FISA. They knew. They all knew. And then they used it anyway in their applications. That's about all I can tell you now. We'll break the story, 9 Eastern, on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. John Solomon, Greg Jarrett, Joe DeGeneva, Victoria Tunsing, Laura Trump on tonight, and much more. Hannity, 9 Eastern, on Fox. See you then. Back here tomorrow.